What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we have a two-part episode for you. For the bulk of the episode, we're going to be examining the only currently airing Real Housewives franchise, which is, of course, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, based on feedback that I collected on social media from Bravo fans a couple months ago. And then after that, I'm going to share with you an interview that I did a couple weeks ago with former Vanderpump Rules star Katie Maloney. So stay tuned for more on that. But first, let's talk about Beverly Hills. So a few months ago, a listener of mine named Samira reached out to me and said the following. Why does RHOBH connect with audiences and get such good ratings? Criticisms that I often see about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills are nothing happens, they only focus on one conflict a season and harp too long on such. It's too surface level. Kyle is a producer favorite despite being boring, too image conscious, etc. Despite the same criticisms year in and year out, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills does comparatively well in the ratings. So maybe the opposite of your Miami episode can be explored. Ask fans why they like / keep watching The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and group the reasons. So for context, Samira is referencing an episode that I did last summer about The Real Housewives of Miami, where I tried to better understand why people who watched other Real Housewives franchises don't watch Miami. Because the long-held sort of party line about that franchise was that it deserved better ratings than it was getting. So what was the deal? Why aren't people watching it? I got hundreds of responses to my call for answers on social media. I rounded them up to kind of paint a more vivid picture of why people were sleeping on or just flat out rejecting Miami. Go listen to that episode if you want. I think it still probably stands up. And I haven't really done an episode like that since, where I sort of crowdsource information and feedback about a certain show. And try to make a better understanding about why people are reacting to it in the way that they are. But as Samira pointed out, there's sort of the flip side question for Beverly Hills here. It's thought to still be one of the most highly rated, if not the most highly rated, Real Housewives franchise currently, you know, in production. And yet it seems to be the one that people complain about the most these days on social media. So why do people watch it? And what are the people who do or don't watch's issues with it? What changes do they want to see in the show? I think Samira's question was sort of more trying to be a little bit more on the positive side, like why do people watch this show? But when I called for responses on social media a couple months ago, it definitely was more like, here's what I don't like about it. So this is going to be an episode about what people's problems with Beverly Hills are, where they want to see changes, what their frustrations are, what their points of contention are. It's not going to be why they're watching it necessarily, except there are some positives towards the end. But I did group together a lot of people's responses to this because I did put a call out on social media way back in January. Then The Traitors started airing. Then Summer House started airing. Then a bunch of shows started airing. So this admittedly fell through the cracks and sort of to the bottom of my pile for a couple months here. It definitely languished in my drafts, but I wanted to finally put this together and bring it to you guys. A couple of caveats before I get into the hundreds of responses that I got on this one. We don't have a full scope still on how many people watch Bravo shows right now. Andy and executives at the network have repeatedly said in interviews over the past like year or so, I want to say, that live ratings don't really matter anymore. They don't look at them frequently. It's more about the full scope of viewership that they care about, which combines live, it combines recorded, it combines, most crucially, Peacock viewership. And that's usually kind of put together over sort of a 7-day or 30-day period when they do release ratings. But
they only release those numbers very selectively and often, again, with different stats attached to them. So it's hard to get a true understanding of how many people are truly watching each franchise or each individual Bravo show these days and how they stack up to one another. But I think it's still the common conception that Beverly Hills is up there with the most highly rated shows on Bravo. It still does get some of the highest live ratings, though. And again, those do not paint a full picture. They aren't full viewership. But if they're getting high live ratings, then you would presume that they also are sort of up there as one of the most watched overall. And the other caveat, of course, is that I polled my followers for these answers really early on in the season of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which has objectively picked up a lot of steam in recent weeks. People still complain about it and have a lot of things to say about the overarching state of the franchise. And so I think that most of the below criticism and points of contention stand up over the past 2 months, despite being submitted before we saw most of this season, which again, I think has gotten a lot better. It had a very, very slow start, which I think, you know, has contributed to the negative ideas around the show this season. And I think before I get to the criticism from other people, I think it's also worth me sharing my current sort of up-to-date thoughts on what's going on Beverly Hills at a high level for season 15, especially because sometimes when I see all the criticism that the franchise gets on online, I often feel less strongly about it or even disagree with it. Because I will say, I generally still enjoy watching this franchise and this cast. You know, when I turn on an episode of Beverly Hills, is it the show that I most look forward to in my week? No. But do I usually enjoy the episode? Yes. I think Kyle, Erica, and Dorit are a pretty solid big three for a franchise. And, you know, we'll get into individual criticisms about them. But I do think, from my perspective, they've given a lot to the show over the years, regardless of what people might think. And also regardless of what they're giving right now. So I think, like, for example, I think this is the best version of Dorit that we've ever gotten, personally. I love how she's not mincing words. I love how she's mentioning it about PK. I love her friendships with Rachel and Bose. I love that she's not sort of protecting Kyle. All that to me makes me appreciate Dorit more now than I ever have. I think Kyle, you know, she waited too long to share the Morgan of it all, but she ultimately did earlier this season. I think it's definitely gotten repetitive with her, though. Like, how many times are we going to see her get sad over her old life without much of an update on her new one? And she totally does produce, and she totally is sort of a producer pet. But I don't always have a problem with that, I guess. Like, to me, like, sometimes when she's criticized for that, I view it as her just doing her job as sort of the leader of the show. Again, she doesn't always produce in the most, like, deft way. But again, I still view it as her doing her job. And then Erica, obviously, I think she's probably the most controversial, but I personally really enjoy watching her. I think she's made to be on television. I'm glad she's there. There are obviously elements of her legal situation that can give me pause, and I wish they were talked about more in depth. But ultimately, I think that she's made for this. I think that she's been open and she's been mixing it up this year. I mean, we heard about her being abused by this guy that she was seeing romantically. If that's not open, I don't know what is. And so I don't have that many complaints about what she's showing us or how she's acting this season, personally. Sutton, she's somebody who I sort of feel like maybe has run her course on the show, particularly without Garcelle there. I just feel like at this point, we've gotten to a point where it just kind of feels like she's sucking up to the rest of the cast to sort of re-ingratiate herself with them. And I think that she's given a lot to the show, too. But I don't know. I'm not sure that Sutton is really adding much value to the show right now. Bose, I really like her, but I want more from her. Rachel, I think that she's been an amazing addition so far. I really love her. She's opening up about her divorce. I love her kids. She's genuinely famous and well-connected and rich. The Hamptons trip that she took Kyle and Dorit on, I mean, that was classic Housewives to me. And she's also getting into the mix more than I expected. And then, of course, there's Amanda, who, is she my favorite person on this show? Far from it. Does she still irk me a lot? Absolutely. But am I also coming around to her from the perspective of her being good for the show, keeping the women on their feet, giving them something to try to figure out, and sort of like putting their steady ground they've been on for so long and making it more unsteady? You know, I appreciate her for all those things. And in that way, like, I'm here for her and her delusion that she truly believes. Like, to me, that's fascinating. Again, there are moments where I'm like, I don't like watching you. And then there are other moments where I'm like, honestly, fuck yeah. So that's sort of where I'm at with Amanda right now. I'm also pretty excited about this trip to Italy. So that's sort of how I'm feeling right now overall about the individual women and the show overall. But also, you know, friend of the pod, Brian Moylan, has pointed out a few times that Beverly Hills airing after Salt Lake City does not do it any favors. You know, we're coming out of Salt Lake City, another like, you know, blockbuster Salt Lake City season. And that show operates at a rapid, thrilling, and I think sometimes overwhelming pace, while Beverly Hills can sometimes feel glacial in comparison, shall we say. And listen, they're fundamentally different shows, but it's also hard not to compare them. But I also feel like it's kind of a fool's errand sometimes to try to do so. Because like Beverly Hills is never going to be Salt Lake City and vice versa. So that's also, I think, a factor here in terms of like where we came into this season as an audience. And again, it does not explain everything. And there are there's a lot of really valid criticism that I'm about to unpack. But I think that's definitely a factor in how we kind of came into the season feeling about it. Okay, all right, let's get into some of this feedback from social media. Again, I grouped commonly themed critiques together, and I'm not going to read all of the responses that I got. I'm trying to read some specific ones and then also some that are really just more representative of other ones that I got. And I will read a bunch of comments that I received and then respond to each grouping of those things. And also, I should note, of course, this is not representative of the majority of the viewership. There are a ton of viewers who are not online at all. They don't engage in the online conversation around Bravo shows and Housewives. So, you know, they might think completely differently from all of these things that I'm about to get into. But I still do think that I got a lot of thoughtful and enlightening responses to this sort of call to arms about Beverly Hills. And I do think there's a lot here that is interesting to know and unpack.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
All right. So the first group of criticism that people have about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is that it's just simply boring and it seems kind of fake. Beverly Hills is often deemed sort of the most aspirational franchise, but for some people, the lifestyle porn and the affluent lifestyle of the cast members isn't enough to interest them. And I guess maybe that's an anymore question mark, like, because I feel like maybe it used to, but maybe not. And also some of that boredom comes from the perception that the women also don't go deep enough. So here are some of the comments I got. It's so boring, same old shit, just like OC. I'm watching, but I'm bored. It's all contrived and not fun. It seems phony and boring. It's slow, so surface, so performative, nothing real, zero substance. The lifestyle porn is not enough for the lack of insight into their lives. It's just gotten boring. I struggle to care about the stories that are told. It's not interesting. Not sure you could pay me to care about Kyle, Dorit, Erica, Sutton. I'm bored. All right, so you get the picture. And I get this. I absolutely do. Do I think it's as surface level as you know, sort of its reputation indicates? I don't think so, personally. And I think the lifestyle porn is actually part of what I still genuinely think sets Beverly Hills apart. So I appreciate that about it. I love that element of the show. And sometimes women who live lives like that, particularly in Los Angeles, where artifice is sort of part of the deal, you know, the fakery is sort of part of being either in or adjacent to the film industry in Los Angeles, where things are fake and plastic. And like, that's just sort of, that's how that city operates sometimes. And I think from the outside, it's hard to understand that. But that's certainly an element of living in LA, particularly if you're rich and sort of at that level. And so for it to exist on the franchise that is operating in that city, that does make sense to me to some extent. And again, that's not excusing any of the, and we'll get more into sort of the surface level aspect of it, but so it's not excusing that, but I do think that having an element of that actually does make sense. The next kind of common critique of it is that it's repetitive. There hasn't been much major storyline movement in a few years, particularly with Kyle, I think. But here are some of the comments that I got. The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, it's on its third season in a row of the exact same storylines. Kyle and Dorit fighting, Dorit getting separated, Kyle pretending she's not dating, Erica giving nothing, I'm bored. It almost feels like I can guess the plot of an episode before it even happens, which doesn't make for riveting TV that I look forward to every week. I still watch, but I do not eagerly await the next episode. The storylines have become stale. For the past few seasons, it's been all about getting Kyle to open up about her off-air relationships when it is clear she won't. And I am not into hearing Dorit lecture at people. We need fresh content. I think this I do agree with, and I co-sign it. I think sometimes production needs to recognize that with some of the women, as I mentioned, sort of with Sutton, they've reached their natural end of their story arc. And if they can still contribute in a big way to the group dynamic and they're genuinely helping the show change it up in that regard, then to me, they're still worth keeping around. I think about Giselle and Potomac as an example of that. But I also absolutely see the argument for that being the case for some of the women here. Like, what are you really contributing, you know? And I guess related to that, some people, of course, have issues with Kyle specifically. So somebody said, I still watch, but Kyle is the duddiest of duds. And somebody else said, as long as Kyle is there, it feels like the dynamic will never truly change and it's stale. So yeah, I personally think that there's definitely an argument to be made that Kyle is holding Beverly Hills back. But I think the flip side of that to me is sort of the big question mark of what Beverly Hills looks like without Kyle. You know, obviously we'll never know until they try it. And no one woman has ever been bigger than a franchise or sort of, you know, irreplaceable, which has been proven time and time again. But I also think there's obviously an argument also to be made that maintaining an OG is important for a franchise to be connected to its roots. So I see it from a variety of different perspectives. And I think for me, I think the biggest thing is that Kyle just needs a break. I was saying it going into this season, coming out of last season, like I will always really love and appreciate Kyle, but I do think that some time away from the show and from the cameras and from the constant sort of cycle of filming, airing, doing press, seeing fan feedback, negotiating your contract, jumping back into filming and doing the whole thing again, I think doing that over and over and over again for 15 years with no break has to have some sort of impact on your perspective and your inability to sort of see the forest from the trees and to live your life fully away from the cameras and to not have that impact the decisions you make. So I think that a break for Kyle would give her some much needed perspective. And it would also allow for some of the group, as somebody mentioned earlier in one of the comments, to figure out what it looks like without her lording over it. You know, does she really hold them back? Test it out, take her out and see what happens. And I think that she could always come back. And the interesting thing about Kyle is that she's a totally worthwhile OG sort of queen pin of Beverly Hills. But for so many years, she was also the beta to a more dominant alpha, namely Lisa Vanderpump. And I don't think this in a shady way. I just don't think that Kyle is necessarily a natural leader, especially for this group of women. And I think that her prominence in this position on this show sometimes reflects that. Like sometimes it doesn't always go down naturally for her to be that person. I think she's a fantastic OG and she's given so much to the show over the years. But I just do think that maybe a break is what's needed for her at some point. I would love to see her come back after that, maybe having lived her life a little bit for a year or two. Who is she dating at that point without the pressure of having to answer about it to fans? Like, that'd be interesting to me to see. All right, the next perspective is that the women just simply aren't open enough, or when they are, it doesn't feel like it's natural or genuine. So here's some of the comments. My issue is that they don't ever seem transparent or open. They try to be so polished. Housewives who have been around for even a few seasons, not to mention long past her housewives prime Kyle, who can only be happy when she makes herself a victim, seem to be in competition for who can reveal the least about their lives. It's too contrived. Production is too close to certain cast members. They have favorites. Kyle, Erica, Dorit, Kyle, Kyle, Kyle. Garcelle was the only one keeping me on board for years. It's not silly rivalries or conflicts between housewives. It's mean, desperate, violent, and even criminal. I still watch, but the franchise feels so controlled and strategy-based, always about alliances, what storylines they want or don't, and how they're coming across. Housewives should largely be ruled by their impulses. I think that's a great point at the end there, being ruled by their impulses. But yeah, I agree with this one too. I think they're definitely really careful, too careful about what they say. And I think that that is sort of a trickle-down effect from Kyle being really careful about the Morgan and Mauricio dynamics. Like, even though I personally do believe that Kyle initially had every intention of talking about Morgan on the show and whatever they had going on the show, I think Morgan pulled back and suddenly put up like all these boundaries and put Kyle kind of between a rock and a hard place in terms of what she was comfortable with Kyle talking about on the show after that tattoo scene and after experiencing how intense the interest was in their relationship after that first season she appeared on. I totally believe Kyle's story that like Morgan essentially didn't want her name brought up. She suddenly didn't want to be talked about. And it's like, wait, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. then when she went along with Morgan's wishes and she was starting to be really careful and withholding about what she said for several seasons, and not just for one season, for several seasons, mind you, if you're someone else on the cast, if she gets to do that, why can't you? You know, it sets a really bad precedent. And I think there's always going to be elements that housewives sort of are able to hold closer to their chest and don't necessarily have to show on TV. But it's arguably crossed a line on Beverly Hills of being too withholding just across the board. Like even Rachel Zoe, like we give her so much credit for talking so much about her divorce and being so open. But in that Hamptons episode where she was talking about like the night that her and Roger like had it out and were never going to come back from whatever fight they had, she wouldn't really talk about the specifics of that one night. And it didn't seem like she was pushed to either. Like normally you would have a producer be like, okay, but tell us about what happened. She didn't really tell us what happened. And so, yeah, this point of contention absolutely holds up for me. And like, that's sort of when I say Bose, I want more from her. I don't really feel like we've gotten to know Bose that well, actually, on the show. She's in her second season. She's great on TV. She's a good presence in the group. But I kind of feel like we're not really cracking the shell, in my opinion. And I like the fertility storyline just doesn't feel super real to me. Maybe it is to her, but there's something about it that doesn't totally feel authentic. And I would love to sort of crack the shell of Bose and kind of get more in there with her. Because again, she's a really compelling character and personality, but I don't feel like we've really, really gotten to know her in a big way yet. All right, next is that there is no longer an activating agent on the cast to get things popping. Like ever since Rinna exited the show, that role has been left unfilled. So as somebody said, like, I'm still watching, but the show needs somebody messy. It hasn't been the same without Rinna. Totally agree with this. Absolutely. We are missing a Rinna-esque figure. But I'm also going to stand by the fact that I think that Rinna left when she should have left. I just wish it wasn't as permanent as it clearly will be. Like, she seems to have no interest in returning to the show. So I think we need to give up that hope. But I would have hoped for more like what I talked about with Kyle, which was just a break from the show. A break to get perspectives, do some other things, live a little bit of your life, and then come back with a fresh outlook and renewed energy. I think that could have been amazing for Rinna. But obviously, like, her exit was one of the more sort of notorious exits in recent Housewives history. So, you know, and she clearly, I think from the press around her book and stuff and her time on The Traitors where she cried about this, like, that also kind of scarred her more than I maybe gave it credit for. I think that really hit her hard in a way that we kind of think of Rinna as like this unfeeling, you know, sort of just like TV character. But I think that, you know, she was booed on stage at BravoCon when she entered. Like she was a great sport about it. Again, I've always talked about how she hit the press line after that, but I think we underestimated how much that impacted her. And I think that that has played into, and sort of the messiness of her exit have played into her not wanting to come back to the show. But again, that's left open this position where it's like, okay, who is going to really stir the pot? You know, Garcelle was sometimes that sort of activating agent, pot stir, but it didn't always work and it wasn't always as effective as Rinna, because I also think that Garcelle did not have that same built-in support that Rinna did with the Vox Force 5. So Garcelle wasn't always willing to do that, and understandably so, because she didn't have as much backup. You know, Sutton usually cowered when she was sort of called to do that. Crystal was never fully accepted by this group. And so Rinna had Kyle, Erica, Dorit, Teddy behind her to go for some of these things, whereas Garcelle really didn't. So I think that it wasn't as effective for Garcelle to play that role sometimes. And then Amanda, she has them all trying to figure her out, and you know, they're all a little thrown off by her, but she isn't stirring the pot in the same way that Rinna did. You know, the cast is missing this, no question. And that also allows them all to be the things we just talked about, which is surface level, maybe inauthentic, withholding. All of those things could potentially be resolved just by adding somebody like Rinna, somebody who could play that role effectively and well. I don't know who that person is, but that would solve a lot of problems for this show. And then speaking of Garcelle, the Sutton and Garcelle situation turned a lot of people off from the show. Here are some of the comments I got. And again, these are not my words. These are comments. Sutton and her racism, abuse of staff, general incompetence, throwing Garcelle under the bus and boring. Not happy that Garcelle is gone. Seeing Rachel Zoe again is the only reason I'll continue to watch. This is the first season I'm not watching. It's been pretty boring the last few seasons and very dark before that. Losing Garcelle was the last straw for me. Listen, I totally get that the Garcelle situation would be enough for people to stop watching the show, particularly if you identify with her. I don't have much to add to this, but I think this is totally fair. I understand this. And she wasn't treated well. And Sutton's fundamental inability to understand Garcelle's perspective for why she was hurt to this day, I think speaks volumes. All right, the next individual person that prevents people from watching is Erica. Somebody said Erica is sued and she is then coddled by the show. She shouldn't be platformed. She doesn't have to answer for any of her alleged crimes. For this one, I kind of disagree. You know, I've liked seeing the aftermath of this whole Tom divorce and subsequent legal situation. And I'd like to see more of it, no doubt. But I have liked watching her rebuild her life with less assets, less resources, while also facing legal troubles. And again, I think that we could benefit from hearing more about those legal troubles. I thought they weren't going to address that, like sort of that $24 million lawsuit that she's facing that's going to go to trial this spring. I thought they weren't going to address that on the show. And if she had gotten away with not addressing that on the show, that would have been ridiculous. But they have mentioned it a couple times. Again, they're not going that deep about it, which is the problem. But they're at least acknowledging it and she's talking about it a little bit. So that's a little bit comforting. But, you know, that one season that Erica went through it, when all the Tom stuff happened, that was a classic Housewives season. Like there are a lot of moments from that season and kind of the next season after that where it's like, she went through the ringer, and I think if you want to say she didn't, that's just to me inaccurate. Again, I totally see why and how people can't really tolerate Erica. They can't stomach her being on the show because of, you know, what her husband was involved with and sort of where their money came from, and whether she knew about that or not is yet to be proven, I guess. But to me, I'm still able to watch it. And I also think that, like, if they were to force her to talk about it all the time, it would also feel, the show would continue to feel repetitive, even more so than it already does, because she would just be talking about it and it would be dominating the show. So I understand why they've sort of moved on from it, because, you know, a lot of times on Housewives, like, a storyline's only really meant to last a season, even if it's like still going on in your real life, the show needs to move on. So that's sort of a dilemma, I think, of the show in general. It's like, okay, how do you track these longer term life happenings and processes, and in Erica's case, legal situations, without it bogging down the show and feeling like we're kind of retrotting the same things? Because these legal situations take a long time. It takes a long time for them to get to trial. So yeah, that one, it doesn't bother me as much, but I completely understand why it bothers people. And then the last batch of feedback is more like miscellaneous or combined reasons. So here are a couple of comments that I got that sort of fall into this category. I stopped watching. Turns out I was mainly invested in Garcelle. Plus, I haven't enjoyed consuming content with displays of excess wealth lately. That stuff's only fun when the world is not burning. Valid. It's so boring and they are not natural or authentic. I'm honestly just so sick of the glam with all Housewives. And Erica's going to court soon. Why are we not talking about anything actually happening? She's talking about it, but again, not in depth. And the glam thing, I'm more bothered by, like, I don't think they need glam on trips. I really don't. I guess it doesn't bother me as much as it used to. The thing that really actually kind of irked me this season, and I have to say, Bose brought her personal assistant on like a 2-day cast trip to Arizona. And also, like, when she was like, my stylist came early to set up all my clothes. Like, something about that, I'm just like, that is not a girl's trip. You're bringing your assistant and your stylist. Again, I think it's one thing to bring glam. Your stylist should send you with your clothes. They do not need to be there to put your outfits together. Your personal assistant does not need to be on a 2-day girls trip for the show. I'm sorry. That is like totally unnecessary and actually breaks the fourth wall in a way that I think is really unnecessary and kind of annoying. Another person said the Fox Force 5 and their microaggressions against Garcelle and her family, outing Denise and scripting all of their storylines to reveal nothing while punishing the housewives who are authentic and sharing the real lives. Oh, and Erica still being on the show and flaunting the wealth she stole. Again, I can't argue with somebody feeling that way. I cannot. Absolutely. Some positives that we got. I still enjoy and watch the show. I'm holding off on judging the newbie Amanda. Although, again, the season had a slow start. Again, this person wrote this in January. Loving Dorit, Bose, and Sutton. Too early to be negative about the whole show. Rachel Zoe makes the show watchable. I love her openness. I've also just seen a lot more Rachel Zoe praise and intrigue about Amanda than existed maybe earlier in the season. To me, like, Amanda sort of seems to be becoming sort of like a cult favorite in a way by some people. She's also still very disliked by a large majority of the viewership, I would say. But I'm seeing some bubbling up sort of support of her, which, again, is what always happens when somebody is ostracized from a cast and it can be viewed as being ganged up on. I think some people are sort of doing it ironically, you know, in terms of their support of her, but not completely ironically. And again, it's easy to root for somebody who is on the outs with the rest of a cast. I mean, she's doing the after show solo. So I'm definitely seeing more of that as the weeks go on. And again, I thought she was great on Watch What Happens Live. So that's my point of view on that. So yeah, that's sort of a roundup of all the feedback. I'm curious if there's anything that was not represented here. Is there something that popped up for you as the season progressed that has come up as a negative or that has made you feel more positively about the sort of the state of the show? I'm really curious. Let me know. DM me. Comment. And yeah, that's it for the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills feedback discussion. I feel like, again, I feel like it's really eye-opening to do these things. And so if you ever have, similarly to Samira who submitted this idea, and credit to her for that, if you ever have an idea similar to this where I can, again, put a call out to social media and kind of sort through a lot of feedback that I get, let me know. Because these are kind of fun and interesting to do. And I promise I won't wait as long to do it next time. It's just been a busy year so far. All right, so now for a hard pivot. I also recently interviewed Katie Maloney in support of her partnership with Senorita. That is the THC drink brand that I also interviewed Dorinda Medley for during the holidays last year. And Katie and I had a really nice chat. You know, we touched on the partnership, but also just got into her life after Vanderpump Rules. You know, to me, she seems so genuinely happy in such a great place, in a solid relationship. She has her podcast. She has something about her. She has a lot going on, and she just seems like in a good place in her life. And I just really liked catching up with her and getting her thoughts on a bunch of different topics. So yeah, I think that you'll enjoy this. And also, before we get to that, I'm going to do a mailbag episode on Tuesday. I posted a couple prompts for people to submit questions, but I'll do one more prompt on the Gabbing with Gib Instagram story on Friday morning. So submit your questions there. To be answered on Tuesday. If there is a Bravo show that I have not talked about that much yet, if there are certain episodes that I didn't talk about that you would like my thoughts on, different happenings outside of the shows, other reality shows, it's all fair game. Put it in the question box and I'll try to answer as many as I can for Tuesday. So go check that out this morning on the Gabbing with Gib Instagram page, or you can also DM that account as well. Anyway, keep listening for my chat with Katie Maloney. Check out her podcast, Unapologetically, and please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. Thank you for listening and have an amazing weekend. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Katie Maloney. We obviously first met her on Vanderpump Rules, but she is also the co-owner of Something About Her, co-host of Disrespectfully Podcast. And we were talking today in support of her partnership with Senorita. Katie, I'm excited to get some time with you today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. How's it out in LA right now?
It's beautiful.
Uh-huh. I'm in New York where it's sunny, but it's been pretty intense with the snow, so I'm jealous.
Well, hopefully it's done. Is it done?
I think so.
Okay.
But in New York, the snow like stays on the curb for like in like a mountain for like a month. So that's the part that I don't like. But you know, it is what it is.
Dirty slush.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cute. Before we get too far into it, I just have to say, Katie, like every time I see something that pops up, whether it's like a clip from Disrespectfully or something of you at Something About Her, like it just feels like you're in such a great spot in your life. You just seem so happy and good. And it's just really, it makes me happy to see as a longtime viewer of Bravo to see just like the place that you are in your life. So I just wanted to say that to start it off. Is that accurate? Like, do you feel good?
Oh, I feel great. No, I was going to say you are correct about that. Thank you for noticing and commenting on that.
Okay, good. So first off, we're here for Senorita. And I'm curious, did you drink any for National Margarita Day?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. No, I I probably have them not every day, but I really enjoy, because I used to drink like wine or I used to have a cocktail or something like that, but I just can't tolerate alcohol the way I used to. And I do, but I do enjoy that sort of buzz or that relaxation that comes along with it, minus having the instant headache and the hangover. It's just, it's been a nice introduction into my life. I really like it.
So I did an interview with Dorinda. Also, she had a partnership with Senorita a couple months ago, and they sent me some. These are good.
What's your favorite flavor?
I like the ranch water one because it's like pretty, just like down the middle, like a just, you know, clean tasting.
I would say probably the ranch water or the mango. I really been
enjoying. Yeah. I was surprised by that one. But it's like, I mean, I'm kind of a lightweight, I guess, when it comes to THC, but like there's 5 milligrams in one of these cans. And I finish one and I'm like, it's a good Friday night on the couch.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it.
So I also feel like just talking to you about like THC drinks and like just, you feel very untethered from, I feel like when you're at Bravo, like there are certain things that maybe you don't get to talk about it much, or you kind of have to hold back about certain things. Like, do you feel like more unburdened now that you have some time away from the network and the show? Like, what's it like to sort of just feel like, all right, I can talk about anything. I can do whatever I want.
No, it is a good feeling, because for so long, I mean, I was on Vanderpump Rules for 11 seasons. That's over, you know, a decade that I was there. And as much as it was really great to be a part of something so epic and a great family over there, yeah, there were things that I felt like I had to fit within, you know, certain brand ethos. And now I can really just be myself unapologetically, especially like on my podcast and just in life in general. And it is weird because I still forget at times that I do have agency now to do that. Yeah. Because I just got so used to it. It just became just second nature to be very toe the line on things. But now, yeah, it does feel nice to just be unburdened by those things and be able to just be myself, you know?
I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, it's such a learned behavior over so much time that like, it makes sense that it would also take some time to unlearn a lot of that stuff.
Exactly. Yes.
The podcast, I feel like with Dana, like, I just feel like you guys are in such a rhythm with it. And I mean, you clearly have such a close, great relationship, but like, talk to me a little bit about like why you feel like that is hitting for so many people, like, because you said unapologetic, and I feel like that's the perfect word for how you guys approach talking on that show. But talk to me about why you sort of think that it's been so successful and been such a hit.
I think, without trying to like overcomplicate anything, we talk about complicated topics, or being, you know, the age that we are and the society and the patriarchy that it's built to kind of try to question those things and challenge it as much as we can, and doing it in a way with, you know, levity, but also real like thoughtfulness. And I think also just breaking down the stigmas of what life is supposed to look like, is supposed to at certain ages, or you're supposed to follow a certain blueprint of mm-hmm. all of that, saying fuck that to that. You can make your own rules, design your own life, and do things your own way and be unapologetic about it. And I think it resonates so much with people of different ages and different stages, because we can speak to ourselves when we are in our early 20s. We can speak to ourselves in our 30s and now entering a new chapter as well. And so I think people that maybe have already been through some of the growing pains that we have been relate to it. And people that haven't quite reached those, you know, sort of stages in life are looking to us for advice. And it feels very cool.
It also, at a certain point, I feel like when you are growing a podcast, it also must feel like you're also building a community, and you're building people who are, they're not just subscribers to your show, like they're kind of part of your world in probably a different way than people were part of your world for Vanderpump Rules, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel like a lot of the Vanderpump people have come over there. But yeah, it does feel like we've built this close-knit community, our coven. And we talk a lot about like, coven core things that are very specific to ourselves and what, you know, our listeners are interested in and things that are unique to us, or maybe not unique, but it feels unique to the coven. It's been really cool the last couple of years to connect with them. And on our Friday episodes, they write in questions and tell us their crazy stories that they've survived. But I love it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Is there anything that you miss about being on a show, you know, Vanderpump Rules, or do you feel like, no, like I'm good?
I definitely feel very good and at peace with it. I mean, I have some great memories, and I don't necessarily think I miss those memories, but if I had to do it all again, I would absolutely. But I don't know. I mean, it's been really nice to step away and just live a soft life and not feel like I'm on edge or, you know, on the defense or constantly having to fight with my friends. It's just, it feels nice to just be relaxed in life.
Is that what it felt like, that there was just kind of pressure to always be doing that, but also like the scrutiny of all that too?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I'm not saying it was hard to know what was real. It was all very real, but, mm-hmm. You know, you want to just to be able to fully trust people in your life, and you can't do that.
The motivations of people. Yeah. I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like a senorita would have been pretty good to take the edge off back then, but.
Yeah. Everyone could have used a couple of those. I mean, less tequila, more senorita.
There we go. There we go. You are also in clearly a very great relationship right now, and it's somewhat of a relief for you to not have to open that up to the cameras.
Yeah. I mean, it's not fun having to live out really intimate, personal, sad, embarrassing, heartbreaking moments with, you know, a relationship on TV. Because then not only is that like just... There's an element of embarrassment there, but then you have the entire world weighing in on it and saying what you should and shouldn't do, and forgetting the nuances and that there's obviously more to what they actually see. So yeah, it is nice to feel like I have something that's my own mm-hmm. that I don't have to share.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, what's it like? Because there's also plenty of people who are still sort of invested in your life, even though you're not showing it in that same way. I would love if you could speak to just sort of like, I feel like once you're on Bravo, you're sort of always a Bravo celebrity in a way. And mm-hmm. so you always sort of have a foot into it. Like, what's that like for you from your experience?
I still appreciate the continued support. I appreciate that people still want to see my journey and are rooting me on in these next chapters and stages, whether it's through the podcast or something about her. Yeah, no, it is wild that there is still so much interest in what's happening. And I guess, yeah, when you do find yourself in a new relationship, people are going to be very curious, because they were so heavily invested in my relationship with Tom that, like,
yeah,
I think we'll want to see like what's next for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what's next for him is that there's the Valley trailer just came out right before National Margarita Day. Do you like when a trailer like that comes out, do you watch it?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm always curious. What are your
thoughts on it?
Oh boy. I mean, part of me, I'm definitely curious about people's journeys, especially, you know, Brittany and, you know, what she's come out of. And I'm very happy for her that she's onto bigger and better things. But yeah, I mean, it was a little triggering to watch it last season. You know, I felt like I've seen that movie before, especially with how heavy some of the topics were. But I mean, no, I think it looks as entertaining as ever.
I feel like Tom is like a big part of it. I just like, or bigger than I expected him to be.
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly how much of a role he's going to play. I mean, I was somewhat aware, but yeah, no, it seems like he's just
in it.
Tom, yeah.
Back in it.
Right, back in it.
And I have done some interviews for the reboot. And I talked to Chris after you guys had a little back and forth. I have to say, Katie, give your cousin a kiss for me is a pretty good line.
I thought that was a bar too. I was pretty bad at that. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I get a little bored too. I get itchy thumbs and I want to throw down in the comment section, because I see a lot and I ignore a lot of it and I just scroll past a lot of it. But sometimes you're like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I feel like getting a little messy.
And I'm glad you did. And I feel like for them, it's like, I understand the balance of maybe not getting too familiar with what the show was to not copy it, but also like, you got to have some respect for the people that built the house that you're operating in, you know?
Yeah, I hate to be trying to bogart and hold on to something as if I haven't made peace with it. But, you know, we built a legacy there that I feel like it just, should be honored at, you know, in his moments. I mean, again, they don't have to like be our biggest fans or whatever, you know, but just to recognize that had we not bled out for 11 seasons, that there wouldn't be a show for them to join. I mean, they would be on, you know, like X on a Beach or whatever those other dating one-off shows are, you know?
Well, he was on one of those before, so.
Exactly. So you'd be on another one. I wasn't necessarily trying to be shady towards them in my English. I don't know if he even knew what I initially talked about, because I was just speaking to the fact that, like, I feel like we had built something so much, you know, with our own lives and our own blood and sweat and tears, yeah. Emphasis on the tears, that it would have been nice to just see, like, let it die as it was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I think that the initial comment that you had made, I think, was misunderstood. I agree, it was misunderstood because we didn't know the cast yet or anything. You were speaking to, like, the nature of just them rebooting it and the way that they did.
Yeah. The principle of
it. Yeah, exactly. So I feel like this partnership with Senorita kind of comes full circle in a way, because back then it was Tequila Katie, and now it's, I guess it's, is it THC Katie? Is that, can we do that?
Yeah, I'm here for that. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's a balance. Yeah, it's a balance. Because every now and then, you know, the margarita is great, but for the day to day, or even just like the more, it's like an 80-20 at this point that I just really enjoy. The THC part, and the THC beverages have gotten so good, especially with Senorita having people who are actual winemakers make something like this, because it's going to be heavy focus on the flavor. I've tasted some, and they're a little,
me too,
you know, herbaceous, we'll say. But with this one, it's so delicious. You don't necessarily taste it. It's just a really great flavor, and accompanied by a wonderful little buzz that you're not going to be hungover from.
That's exactly. It's the best. It's the best. Because so something about her, obviously, it came, you guys built that together, you and Ariana, at the end of the Vanderpump Rules run. And how's it going? Like, what's the latest on something about her?
It's going really good. It's definitely been like just such a educational couple years almost. We'll be 2 years in May. A lot of stuff to iron out and learn in the first year. The first 6 months, we were really extremely busy, that we couldn't quite work into our catering side of things or be available on delivery online, whether it's Uber Eats or Postmates, because we just still needed to figure out like what our prep schedule is going to look like. How much do we need to prep? There was so much to figure out. It was hard to manage all that while we were just simply trying to serve everyone that lined up that day.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's been wonderful to work into the more of the online orders, because I feel like we have so much business that we can do online. And same with catering. We were really trying to like work more into the catering and maybe happy hour, just different things to get people excited coming in, doing like limited runs for sandwiches. But it's just a lot of fun. And like, we have like a really wonderful community in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
A lot of return repeat customers, people in the neighborhood. I love like a neighborhood restaurant vibe, so that's been a lot of fun. But I'm excited for the future.
Good. I hadn't even thought about, I mean, silly, of course I should have, but like the online ordering aspect and the catering aspect of a sandwich shop, I hadn't even caught that. Those are two huge elements of or opportunities for the business. Like, I hadn't even, is that becoming like a really large part of it?
We want it to become an even larger part, especially how many, you know, the industry around the city of photo shoots and music video shoots and all the different opportunities we could have for catering that we really want to capitalize on. So that's where our focus is right now.
That's exciting. I mean, and again, like I've been watching these shows and talking about them for so long that like I always, seeing who really sets themselves up to have like other things going on if the show were not to exist tomorrow, you know, for them. And I feel like you've done such a good job of that. Like, I feel like that must almost like soften the offshoot of it, you know, like you're, I don't know, you have stuff going on.
I mean, it's harder than you might imagine, because obviously so much of the show is following your journey into those different things and finding something that feels authentic and you really care about and want to do, but also would make great TV. It's hard, you know, especially because so much of it is wrapped up into the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being a DJ just sometimes works best in Cree.
I mean, clearly, like, you can't even count them on two hands anymore who's DJing these days. So we're not gonna have DJ Katie Maloney anytime soon.
No, unless you come to emo night, then maybe.
Oh, I mean, that sounds pretty fun.
It's fun. It's a really good time.
Something that I have like been saying that Bravo should do forever is they have Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip, but I'm like, where's our girls trip for Vanderpump Rules, Summer House, Southern Charm, The Valley? Is that something that you would do?
I love when they do like the crossover with the shows, like with the Housewives road trips and things like that. So yeah, we've been asking that for years.
Oh, you have been.
I mean, just into the void, not necessarily okay. To the powers that be. Okay. But I mean, I remember, I feel like there was times like BravoCon would be like, hey.
Yeah.
Just so you know. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'll be back to Bravo. I can't say that. I don't know. I didn't go to BravoCon. So I think
what was it like watching BravoCon not being there? Or like just knowing it was happening?
I was thinking, I mean, those days are so long.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, they must be so tired. But yeah, I know. It was weird because leading up to it, I didn't expect to go. So I knew it was never like something that was on my radar. But then when it was happening, I did feel a little bit of FOMO, but I think that's to be expected.
Mm-hmm. Let's just say in a perfect world, that show could happen. Who would you choose from other shows to be on with you?
I mean, I love like Lindsay and Amanda, and then who else would we want on that? Probably like Madison.
Yeah. There's also The Valley and Vanderpump Rules, so that could be part of it. But
yeah, then Kristen.
Mm-hmm. That's a good cast. Let's shape it up.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like over here, I'm like trying to remember who's on Bravo. Like, who would I want to hang out with? That's the most
right. Exactly. Who would you want to have?
Me and Ariana.
Go on a Below Deck boat with this group, pack the Senorita six pack, and like per person, call it a day.
Oh my God. That sounds like a dream vacation.
Get me Andy and a camera. Okay. Well, Katie, this has been so much fun. I'm so glad I got to connect with you. And again, I meant when I said up top, you just seem like you're in such an amazing place. And I know that a lot of people, like, it makes a lot of people happy to see that. And so I just, you know, keep doing all your things. Like, you're killing it. And
Thank you.
Yeah. So I appreciate that you taking the time today.
I appreciate you having me. It was nice to see you.
Me too. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time. Thank you.